Just Love, a conversation on the church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and we kind of call it Just Love because we say just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We continue our celebration of the Easter season, a celebration of the season in which we celebrate kind of the resurrection of Jesus and the new life that his resurrection brings. And this week, we also are going to talk about national volunteering because we're in the midst of kind of national volunteer time. So we're going to speak about volunteering, and volunteers are some of those who bring life to our world. And we're going to speak with two people in just a moment who are going to kind of share with us their own little experience of volunteering and talking about how our world is better off because they volunteer. And then kind of a little later on in the show, we'll talk with somebody else who can give us another sense of what is going on in volunteering and what's going on in the world in which people try to reach out, in which they try to kind of help one another. And, you know, sometimes we're going to deal with millennial generations, which sometimes are characterized in ways which are not oftentimes so very popular. But so that's where we're talking a little bit about volunteering and seeing that, in fact, there are a lot of millennials who are volunteering to help others in need. So that's what we're going to be talking about today on Just Love. And kind of before we get to our first two guests who we're fortunate enough are in the studio, Tom, is there any news that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure, Monsignor. As you know, today on Saturday, Pope Francis is currently in the process of visiting the Greek island of Lesbos. He was invited there by the invitation of the Orthodox Patriarch Bartholomew of Constantinople, and he and Bartholomew are actually going over, along with Archbishop Ariamos II of Athens, to meet the refugees who are currently staying on the island, and they're at risk of being deported back to Turkey. Over the past 2 weeks, Monsignors, you're probably aware, the European Union began to deport refugees currently staying on Lesbos back to Turkey. In return, the European Union promised that they would take in thousands of Syrian refugees directly from Turkey, and they were also going to compensate the Turkish government with some money. However, the move is being denounced by human rights organizations who claim that it violates the European Union's obligation to protect refugees. And as you may recall, Monsignor, this is kind of similar to a trip he made very early in his pontificate, about a week in, when he visited the Italian island of Lampedusa, which is where thousands of victims of what he described at that time as the forced migration were congregating off the coast of Italy. So at that time, of course, this is when before the migration crisis had really begun. And this was very early in his papacy when he began that.
Tom, thank you. And obviously, the issue of refugees is an issue that Pope Francis has made a very important part of his ministry as Pope. And as you know, when he came to visit the United States, Catholic Charities was privileged to arrange for him to meet with refugees and immigrants in East Harlem, and he shared a very brief period of time, but a very, very warm and very important time in which he again showed his concern for their situations, their plight, and a willingness to kind of reach out and to be with them for that time to learn more of what they were experiencing. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that Pope Francis said after meeting with those immigrants and refugees, that he was surprised as how many different countries and cultures were represented in that room. He had expected, coming to the United States, that almost all of those whom he would have met would have been from Latin American countries. And by far, those are the greatest number of immigrants who come to the United States. But by no means are they the only immigrants, or even a small percentage, a significant percentage, come from other parts of the world. And kind of for our listeners, just a little bit of a refresher is that kind of we talk about people who are displaced. And when we do that, we talk about immigrants, we talk about refugees, and we talk about, technical term, internally displaced persons. And the difference is, quite frankly, the following. Refugees are those people who leave a country and they cross a border to go to another country because they're fleeing persecution. They're in fear of their lives, in fear of their health, in fear of their safety, and so they flee to another country. And they're called refugees, according to the United Nations definition. But then there are tens and tens of millions of people who are also displaced, but they go to another part of their own country. So they are what are referred to as internally displaced persons. And there are tens of millions of those in different parts of the world. And I happen to know that, and we will talk a lot more about it next week on Just Love, is because I just had the opportunity to go on a very, very kind of moving visit to visit the internally displaced Christians who are in northern Iraq or Kurdistan. And so next week we'll talk a lot more about those people who have been displaced. And then the third category that of people on the move are migrants or immigrants, those who aren't in fear of persecution, but there are certain circumstances in their own countries which kind of impel them to move someplace else. Most times it has to do with economic deprivation, that there aren't jobs there, that there's significant poverty. And so they see the hope for themselves and their families by moving to a new country. And those are what we call immigrants. So the immigrants kind of move basically because of economic reasons, seeking a better life for themselves and a family in another country. Internally displaced people are those who are forced to flee because of safety, for fear of them, their lives, to a different part of their own country. And then refugees who fear for their own lives, their safety, and they move to another country. They cross a border to go to another country. So that's the category of people on the move, migrants who we have a particular care for, and Pope Francis has kind of raised up as people who warrant a special concern by the church. So let's turn, Tom, now to our first guest, and I'm delighted that we have in the studio with us Joe Camerata and Lindsay Pastilli, who are both kind of in the real estate industry, but that's not why we're here to talk with them today. We're here to talk with them about the fact that they also volunteer and they help out in a variety of ways. Lindsay and Joe, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank Great. You, Monsignor.
So tell us a little bit, Lindsay, why don't you tell us first about, tell us a little bit about your background, what you're doing now, and then how you got interested in kind of giving back and volunteering.
Okay, so my dad is the president and CEO of our family-run business in Astoria, a real estate firm. And my dad's always been involved in giving back to the community and helping out, donating, volunteering. And I think I guess I kind of followed in his footsteps. And Joey had introduced me to the junior board. And through Joey, I became a board member along with him. So
great. Now, the junior board, which Lindsay's talking about, is the Junior Board of Catholic Charities. And we refer to this junior board is because, quite frankly, they're a little bit more junior in their careers and a little bit more of a younger generation, millennials, but not only millennials, who want to get involved with Catholic Charities in a variety of ways. So the junior board that Lindsay just referred to is the Junior Board of Catholic Charities, which kind of has a threefold mission to kind of create a social opportunity for younger people to get involved, the opportunity to also volunteer on a number of different projects, and the opportunity to raise some funds for some good causes. So that's the junior board that Lindsay was talking about. So Joe, give us a little bit about your own history and how you got involved with volunteering.
Yeah, so I think giving back to the community was always in my blood from a very young age. in high school, I was part of Habitat for Humanity, where we built homes out on Suffolk County in Long Island. And I even went down for the Appalachian Service Project, which was in Tennessee, where we got to give back to some very needy people. And it was just a great experience overall. I went to college at Villanova, and I kind of lost track of that community.
Did Villanova, were they recently involved in some basketball games?
Yeah, we had a small victory where we became the national champions.
I see. What did you think of the last shot?
Oh, me and Lindsay were actually in Houston for it, and it was spectacular. It's kind of a blacked out memory in my mind. I don't know if I really can soak it in yet, but I've watched enough replays where it was just a great time.
Great. So keep going.
Yeah. So college, I really lost track of giving back to the community. And, you know, when Pope Francis came to be Pope, I think that really excited my Catholic faith again. And I really wanted to give back to the community. And it was actually at the Wall Street Breakfast where, Monsignor, you introduced me to Jasmine. And we really got to start talking. And I found out what the Junior Board does. And ever since then, we've been a part of it, and it's just been a great experience. Now, the Junior Board has many activities that me and Lindsay have participated in. For example, a midnight run, which is a bit of a misnomer, where you go to the offices of Catholic Charities, and we pack meals. And then we go out, either on our way home or to Penn Station, and try to hand out meals to the homeless people of New York City. And it's just a very rewarding experience.
So, Lindsay, why don't you share with us a little bit of what volunteer activities you've gotten involved with through the Junior Board?
Through the Junior Board, we, like Joey had mentioned, the Midnight Run. I believe two of our favorites were attending the Lot Residence, where you go and visit elderly people and you play games with them.
So Lindsay, let me interrupt for just a moment. The Lot Residence is one of the programs, a facility that was developed by a priest of the Archdiocese, Father Robert Lott. For those who have some idea of New York, it is a little bit off Central Park, but not the downtown part of Central Park, but a little bit uptown in Central Park. And this is a residence for hundreds of seniors who no longer have the capacity to live on their own, in their own houses or in their own apartments. So they need some assisted living in this apartment in right off Fifth Avenue. It's on Fifth Avenue, overlooking Central Park, and they can use some help through volunteering. And that's the residence that Lindsay's talking about. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved there and what you did.
Well, it was through Jasmine. Jasmine would email Joseph and myself, Joey and myself, and she would say, hey, you know, we have this upcoming event. Do you want to come? And Joey and I love doing it if we can. So we went, and the theme was carnival. So you'd play games with the seniors, and they would get up and
did
start dancing. No.
No?
I didn't. Surprisingly, no. They're feisty.
They're good. They are good at their
You didn't
carnival.
Just let them win to be nice.
No, I'm very competitive. I won't give a win up.
Okay.
But, you know, Joey was playing games with them, and I actually found, I don't remember the woman's name, but I got into a very deep conversation with somebody, and Joey had to pull me away from her. I'm like,
what'd you talk about with her?
We spoke about her. She grew up in France and how her family came over here. She met her husband in France. Just about her life and her family, her grandkids. At that time, Joey and I were not engaged. We just got recently engaged.
Hey,
in November.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have you set a date for getting married?
We did.
When are you getting
October 1st.
Yay! Can we get some applause for that?
In studio.
Yeah, in studio.
Yay.
So she was like, oh, Joey. She pulled Joey over. She's like, let me talk to you. You have a winner here. You have to propose to her. So, but I mean, it was really a great time. We really enjoyed ourselves.
Did you put her up to that?
No, we didn't.
We don't really know the answer to that.
I'll keep to that story. Okay. But so we attended the Lot Residence, and We also did the Meatloaf Kitchen,
which
Joey and I got to be honest with you, attending these things, they're happening on the weekends, Saturday mornings, 8 o'clock. We're like, oh, we have to go. My goodness, we need coffee. And then once we get to these events, it is a lot of fun. You're with people your own age, and you get to talk to them, you get to mingle. But it is one of the most gratifying feelings to know that you are doing good for somebody. You're actually doing it yourself. It's more, I mean, Joey and I are very fortunate enough that we can go and, you know, give checks to different various charities and organizations. But I think that through Catholic Charities, through the Junior Board, we took it one step further and we got to actually volunteer and see where the money that we donate is going to. And that was our first event, the Meatloaf Kitchen. That was the first outing that we did. And it was tiring.
You had to work at it, right?
Yes. Yeah. It was very tiring, but it was amazing. It was a lot of fun and very eye-opening. It was a very...
Joe, you did Meatloaf too?
Yes.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your own experience at Meatloaf.
What Lindsay said is absolutely true. It is a tiring but extremely gratifying experience. I know the Meatloaf Kitchen has been around for many, many years, and the people that go every single week, you really have to take your hat off to them because they are serving a community that needs this food every morning. They have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's a very, very gratifying experience, but it is a lot of work, and you can see how much work really goes into. I don't know how many people they actually feed every day, but it has to be in the hundreds.
Well, I think, you know, on a sad day, I think they might feed over 300 people on any given sad day. It varies a little bit, but I think they're pretty consistent in what they serve. We're speaking with both Lindsay and Joey, Lindsay Pastillo and Joey Camerata, who we learn today on the show are engaged and going to be married shortly. And we're not sure whether Lindsay put up the senior at to get Joey to ask her. But anyway, we're delighted that they're getting that they're engaged and that they're going to get married. And they're millennials. And so we're speaking to them about the generosity of millennials in kind of giving back and volunteering. You know, it's interesting just for our listeners. Do you know why? The Meatloaf, why we refer to it as the Meatloaf Soup Kitchen?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay. How many times have you volunteered there? Once?
Yeah, it was once.
Okay. Now, the reason it's called the Meatloaf Soup Kitchen is because for the 30 years or so, it might even be 40 years, that they've been in existence, they've served meatloaf every single Saturday.
Wow.
That's the only meal that they serve. And that's why we call it the Meatloaf Soup Kitchen. Now, you might think that's boring, but you imagine that there's a consistency to it, and who doesn't like meatloaf? So the people there love it, so they come in to get meatloaf. But, you know, it's interesting, and I ask you a little reaction to this. Any differences that you noticed in the people whom you were with at the lot residence and the people who you were with at Meatloaf, at the food pantry? Lindsay, any differences you noticed?
Can you clarify? Do you mean like the people that were helping or
the No, people? The people who were being helped.
I mean, it's a huge difference. We didn't get to interact with people at the Meatloaf Kitchen. We were just cooking. We saw people come in, and you could tell that the woman in charge of it all was very hands-on, would go over there, chat with them, hug them, and do everything. So we didn't really get to, we were just preparing the food. We were in the first time slot.
Right.
And then there's a second time slot where you actually sit down and serve them and talk to them. So we weren't fortunate enough to interact with them a lot.
Right.
But with the seniors, it was, I mean, so much fun. I mean, we really, really, truly enjoyed ourselves.
That's great. Joey, did you come away with any differing impressions from the two volunteer experiences?
I think the difference is obviously the economic status between the people you're helping at the lot residences and the people you're helping at the Meatloaf Kitchen. But the similarities were that they were both extremely happy that people were there giving their time and doing something for them, whether it be feeding them or just entertaining them and being with them and talking with them throughout the day. I think that's really what hit home, is that everyone had a smile on their face, everyone was enjoying themselves, and everyone was happy to be there.
You know, Joey and Lindsay, I think what you point out is something that's so true, that in all of the Catholic Charities programs, and you volunteered in two very, very important programs, is that the attempt in those programs, whether it be by the staff or volunteers, is that people are treated as individuals. They're treated as persons. We say we believe every person is made in the image and likeness of God and therefore should be treated with dignity and with respect. And so that's a very important part of it. And as Lindsay, you pointed out, the person who was interacting with the people coming in for a meal, you know, hugged them and got to know them and knew their names, because unfortunately, they probably had come back many times and they needed that help. And so I think that's a really important part of it. And again, I do think, Joey, what you picked up and Lindsay too, is that, you know, the programs are very different. And one of the things that I think is really, really an incredible great divide among people, and you experience this, the people at the lot residence have a safe, secure place to live.
Right.
And that creates a lot of stability. Oh, they need help. And, you know, they may be elderly, they may be frail, they may have some health issues, but they do have a safe, secure place to live. You can't say that about all of the people who came to that soup kitchen. Some of them, maybe some of them did, but a lot of them may go from a shelter to a shelter, or they may be in danger of losing their apartment, or they just recently. And you can kind of sometimes see that in the struggles that people have, and sometimes a little bit of the awkwardness in the way they interact with people. There's a, you know, they really are striving just to survive sometimes, and that creates, you know, a very different atmosphere in what's there.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think what you mentioned about especially the Meatloaf Kitchen in the 40 years they've been in existence is that they've been open every Saturday. And I think that stability is what those people need, and that they need to know at every Saturday they can come to Meatloaf Kitchen and get a meal. And I think that's extremely important.
It is. And again, one of the things that we try to do at all of our Catholic Charity soup kitchens and all of our food pantries is we try to make available somebody professional there who can say to a person, hey, you know, let's look at what's going on with you. Maybe there's some things we can help you to do. So we pray that maybe you don't have to come back here, that maybe you can, you know, we can kind of move you towards greater self-sufficiency, greater independence. So that's part of what we try to do there.
And I think, oh, sorry.
Lindsay,
no, go ahead.
I also think that the Midnight Run ties into that, where you go on I think it's the second Wednesday of each month, and you go, you meet up with the junior board, you prepare the food, you make the sandwiches, you stuff the bags, and you also supply them with a card that gives a helpline and information about trying to get them on the right path to help them out. And I think that really ties into, it goes along with the Meatloaf Kitchen, where, you know, you're trying to get them onto the right path. So,
yeah.
Just thinking, it's one of the best things about Catholic Charities and the Junior Board is that you're helping everybody, no matter their faith, no matter their age. You don't ask them if they're Catholic or Christian. You are just trying to help a person in need. And I think that's really what Catholic Charities and the Pope's message is about.
Well, Joey, on that note, I want to thank you and Lindsay, because I know you're working, that you took time in the middle of your day to come into the studio here. Just great. And thank you for all the volunteer work that you do, Lindsay. Thank you, Joey. Thanks for being part of Catholic Charities Junior Board, and the best of success in I don't really care that much about your wedding, but that your marriage is very life-giving to both of you and gives light to the world. So thanks so much for being part of Just Love today.
Thank you, Monsignor.
You know, Tom, I think we'll take a break and we'll talk a little bit when we come back. We just were really, really fortunate to speak with two great junior board members of Catholic Charities, Joey Camerata, Lindsay Pastilli, and we'll be back in just a few minutes on Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Would you stand up? What would you think? What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And if we just loved God, and if we just loved our neighbor, and we just loved ourselves better, our world would be more just and more compassionate. And so today, which is in the middle of kind of national volunteer time, we are looking at volunteering. And, you know, sometimes they say that millennials are not as generous as previous generations, but our first two guests, Joey and Lindsay, kind of gave a little bit of pause to those who would be saying those things because they have volunteered in a number of different ways with our Catholic Charities Junior Board in three different activities that we've had. So they certainly give a little bit of counter argument to those who saying that millennials aren't very generous. And in a little while, we'll speak with Peter Levin, who is the Associate Dean for Research at Tufts University. And we're going to be speaking again a little bit about volunteering and what his research has indicated. So Tom, what else we have in terms of news?
Well, you know, Monsignor, you were mentioning to Lindsay and Joey a little bit about when they were going to the Meatloaf Kitchen, about those folks who come to the Meatloaf Kitchen and their needs. And down in the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Catholic Charities down there is putting discarded shipping containers that are apparently very numerous when you go to the port of Tampa, St. Pete down there, to new life. Pinellas Hope, which is the homeless shelter run by Catholic Charities down in St. Petersburg, is buying used shipping containers and turning them into housing for local homeless residents. The shelter basically buys the shipping containers and welds them into safe places to stay Each container is split into three individual homes. They cut out doorways and spaces for air conditioning. They put in framing and insulation, electric and air conditioning. And the whole process takes about 7 days, costs about $25,000 to put together. Currently, they have five containers divided into 15 individual homes, but Pinnell's Hope is hoping to outfit 50 containers for folks down there. The cost of probably about $1.25 million. And these are very essential months here because so often people down in that area of Florida, a lot of the homeless folks, as you said, don't have secure places to stay. So they wind up staying outside, oftentimes in tent cities. But let's remember, Florida's hit a lot by hurricanes. So these new places they're going to live can withstand winds of 140 miles an hour. So Pinnell's Hope is trying to help out their homeless brothers and sisters and do it in kind of very creative way.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I, Tom, as you know, I just spent the last week in Kurdistan, the northern part of Iraq, visiting refugees there were there, mostly Christians, but also some Muslim and Yazidi. Actually, technically, they're not refugees because they come from other parts of Iraq and have not crossed a recognized nation-state border, which is the technical definition. But interestingly, the refugee camps, the displaced persons camps that I visited were basically containers. And exactly what you talked about. I mean, at first I didn't like the word containers because it didn't seem to me to be a really nice word. But I mean, they're containers, but they've been modified.
Right.
So it's, you know, they're, we would probably say more in this country, they're more like trailers that, you know, that you would see. And I would say these camps were more like kind of trailer parks that you would say. Not individual, they were close together. Certainly not ideal places to live. But as you said, they had certain the characteristics. They were modified so that people could live in them with a certain amount of propriety and a certain amount of dignity. And there was the opportunity in some places for something. They told me it wasn't air conditioning, but it was something that used a lot less electricity, but it had the effect of dehumidifying and cooling down the containers, even though it wasn't formally air conditioning. And, you know, while we might say it's a container, or they sometimes use the word caravan, but it certainly was better than some of the images that you sometimes see of camps, which are tent camps, and there's no protection at all. So, you know, that's, you know, and there's a lot of talk about doing that in different parts of the world in order to give people at least some shelter from a place where they're living. So anyway, so Tom, any other news?
Yeah, you know, earlier this week, Monsignor Secretary of State John Kerry was over in Japan, and he was over there with a group of diplomats from what's called the Group of Seven countries. That includes Germany, Italy, France, Canada, Japan, and the European Union. And they were over there to talk about disarmament, and particularly nuclear disarmament in kind of a very unstable world that we wind up living in. And it was interesting, Monsignor, because they were in Japan, and they went to go visit the Hiroshima Peace Memorial Museum that obviously is in the center of downtown Hiroshima, where, of course, the atomic bomb on August 6, 1945, little boy exploded and killed well over 250,000 people in that city at that time. And they were in Japan, this group, to prepare for a meeting on, as I said, arms control of the major industrialized nations. But interestingly, Secretary of State Kerry was quoted as saying that going through the museum was a reminder of the depth of obligation that every single one of us in public life, and in fact every person in a position of responsibility, carries to work for peace. And in the end, he said he hoped eventually, when President Obama goes next month, that he also would be able to go to attend the Hiroshima Memorial in order to be able to give context a little bit about what they're doing, because obviously this group is going to come together and talk about disarmament. But if you go and see the effects of what has happened, I think that gives context to what their talks really are about.
You know, Tom, what you said that Senator Kerry said about, you know, remembering what had happened. Again, it was a little bit of what I experienced in when I was just in Kurdistan, Iraq, that obviously that there is a relationship between the American invasion there, the war that was there, and some of what's going on now. And there was, you know, a reminder that, you know, when one undertakes something, one has to be concerned about the ramifications of it. And then one has to think about what one's response is afterwards in terms of the havoc that was caused there. Again, I'm reminded, and it was brought up in our trip there, that, you know, the response of the Marshall Plan after World War II in rebuilding Europe certainly had a great deal of you know, self-interest in making sure that Europe was stable and understood its relationship to the United States, but also a great deal of altruism in terms of making sure that the devastation of the war was rebuilt and that there was a new possibility going forward. So, you know, that's a very important thing for us to keep in mind. What happens after you undertake a major event, be it a war or whatever, to see what the future holds. You know, let's take a break, and when we come back, we will speak with the Associate Dean for Research at Tufts University, Peter Levine. And join us when we come back in just a moment, too. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love God, Just Love Your Neighbor, Just Love Yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about what is going on in the world, and we look at it through our perspective of our kind of Catholic moral vision about a just and a compassionate world. And we call our show Just Love because if we just loved God, we just loved our neighbor, and we just loved ourselves better, our world would be more just and more compassionate. We're talking about volunteering this show, and this is kind of the time when our nation focuses on volunteering. And we spoke with two people who are millennials who are volunteering, who have volunteered. And now we're going to speak with Associate Dean for Research at Tufts University, Peter Levine, and we're going to speak with him about kind of his experience in looking at civic engagement and a little bit about, you know, is it true what sometimes they're saying about millennials, that they're selfish, that they only care about themselves, they don't volunteer? We're going to find out whether that's based on reality or just kind of a little bit of a factoid, a rumor or a myth. Professor Levine, thank you so much for being with us today on Just Love.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Give our listeners just a little bit of sense of your background and how you got to be interested in what you're studying these days.
Sure. So we study civic engagement of young people. Civic engagement is broader than volunteering, but it includes volunteering. Also things like voting, which we're busy studying right now because there's an election on.
In this country, yeah. There's an election?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
It'll be over. It'll end. But right now it is, yep. I'm a philosopher by training, actually, which is a weird training to be doing the kind of work I do. I came into this because I was concerned about democracy and civil society in America and started to worry about...
Hey, let me tell you, you got a lot to be concerned about this year.
Oh, yeah, it's getting, in some ways, getting worse.
Right.
But then the focus on youth is really just because they're the future. So right. If you want to fix the problems, then they're the future.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what you've discovered in kind of your research about young people, millennials, and what's going on with them when it comes to, we can broaden it out, civic engagement and volunteers, broaden it out if you want.
Well, sure. And you set up a good question by saying, you know, is it true about the stereotype that they're selfish? And no, as I think you know, it's false. It's really the opposite of true. Millennials vote. I mean, let me leave voting aside for a minute.
Okay, sure.
Millennials volunteer, do community service at a higher rate than ever seen before. They're certainly at a higher rate than their own parents. And they show a lot of other signs of idealism. For example, they're way more people who are willing to do a whole year of low-paid community service through AmeriCorps or through private groups, including the Jesuit Corps, then there are spaces. So there's tremendous oversubscription for those good programs.
And why do you think that's the case?
I think there's some evidence that millennials are actually pretty idealistic, just sort of personally, or you could say spiritually or subjectively. But the other piece of it is we've built up volunteering. You know, this is, I guess, Volunteering Month. I appreciate your reminding me of that, and I forgot.
Okay.
But it's part of, actually, naming a month Volunteering Month is part of building up a whole structure for volunteering that really has happened since the 1980s. We've got a federal program. We've got state support, state requirements. Every kid, for example, in the state of Maryland has to do in public schools, has to do community service to graduate. We've got rewards. A lot of kids do service in high school because they think they have to get into college. And you know, sometimes you get a cynical take on that, which is, oh, they're only volunteering because they have to. But I guess I feel like there's a lot of evidence that actually it teaches lifelong skills and habits, and people learn that they like to volunteer.
Well, you know,
let me just interrupt
for a second. And I think
you just
hit it right on the nail on the head. I mean, why do we bother to try to teach people things if we don't intend to try to pass on some valuable skills or good skills? And what you've just commented on is why in every religious education program, particularly as kids get older, there's a volunteering or a service component that's part of it, because religious people believe that serving is a constitutive part of what it means to be a believing person. And if you do it while kids are young and while, to be perfectly honest, while you can force them to do it, well, maybe they'll build up the habit that they'll carry on and do it of their own will when they get older.
Right. I'm with you. I mean, if the math scores go up, we don't say, oh, well, that's not real because we made kids study math.
Right.
We're excited.
Right.
They learned it. And the same with volunteering. The other quick point on the religious experience is that actually I agree. And the religious program, volunteering service programs have very good outcomes. And I think that's partly because often the adults in charge of them have a deep, committed and self-conscious view of why they're doing the service, right? And that's a thing that's hard to take into the broad secular world, because it's much harder, for example, for a public school teacher to say, why we're doing this in a way that's deeply compelling, because they are going to feel that they can't put it in their own religious or ideological or spiritual framework in the way that a religious educator can. So I'm in favor of secular public schooling, but I'm very interested in the way that, in particular, actually, Catholic schools have a tremendous record of civic learning through service that we need to figure out how to replicate.
Yes, and again, in the world that we live in, to go maybe just a little bit on a tangent, I mean, there are times when I think we have, unfortunately, far too many examples in which religion can be deviant, whether it be Christian, Islam, whatever, that deviant religion can sometimes cause a whole lot of problems in the world. But I'm biased on this, but when you get religion right, mm-hmm. it can do a tremendous amount of good. And I think some of the deviant religion gets, you know, a lot of publicity because there's so much good religion that's going on. And we need to foster that in terms of kind of making our world a better place. So I think it is important.
No, I agree. Yep. There's a wonderful book by my friend Jim Eunice, about Gonzaga High School in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, as you probably know, a Jesuit high school. It has predominantly African-American, predominantly Protestant students. And what they take away from the Jesuit fathers is not to become Catholics, have their own religious commitments, but what they take away is a sense of purpose and consistency and the need to be able to articulate what you're doing and why. So that's the opposite of telling kids, you know, get on the bus, we're going to go clean up a park. I don't know why.
Right.
That's disastrous, and there's a fair amount of that.
So what do you think accounts for in, you know, that there's more kind of volunteering, but if there's more volunteering than the previous generation, how come they get worse press on it?
So I think part of the press is just I find annoying. there's a tendency to, you know, it's a problem with the press. Right. I mean, there's very many good reporters in press, but, you know, press is driven by negative stories. News is bad, people behaving badly. And there's a tendency to try to answer the question, what's wrong with kids today, instead of asking what's actually going on with kids today, which will yield in many ways, a more positive picture. I mean, you probably know, but there are also declining rates of crime, of teenage pregnancy, of drug use. I mean, millennials actually look pretty good if you take an unbiased look. So I think it's bias is what I'm saying.
Okay, while if we move a little bit beyond the simple numbers of the proportion of people engaged or involved doing service, is there a difference, though, as we move through generations with the notion of volunteering than there was, even if we kind of abstract from the numbers themselves? Is this anything different going on?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, one thing is, so the critique is that volunteering becomes standard and very widespread and becomes sort of an end in itself. There's an anecdote that may be apocryphal, but I hear it all the time, that somebody says, I was so glad to go to the soup kitchen and volunteer at the soup kitchen. I just hope that soup kitchen is here for my grandchildren. And you want to shake that person and say, no, we would actually like not to have a soup kitchen when your grandchildren arrive. The point is not service itself, although there might be, it might be that service is always part of the good life, but the point of doing the service is to change the world. And so there's a little bit of a concern that millennials are getting the message that they should just serve, and they're not actually as good at or as empowered to change the world as some predecessors were.
But you know what you point out is an experience that I think we have in a lot of different ways, and the example you brought up is a real good one, because we see it all the time. One of the most popular volunteer programs is volunteering at food pantries and things like that, particularly around the holidays, that you know, there are not enough slots for the people who want to do it. And, you know, we periodically try, maybe not well, but we periodically try to say to our volunteers, hey, you know, there's more to this. We should be trying to move people towards self-sufficiency. We should look to them moving in other directions. And quite frankly, that's a little bit of a harder sell to some of the volunteers to get them involved in some of those other things. So I think what you point out is one of the challenges that there are with volunteers.
Yeah, and it's probably always been that way, but I think there's a generational element to it because, you know, young people are pretty disempowered about making big changes at this point. I mean, there's a lot of pessimism about, you know, so one vehicle for making bigger change is politics. It's only one vehicle. It's not the only one. You're entitled to stand away from it if you don't want to go that way. But it is a truth about this generation that they see volunteering as a way to change the world, and they do not see politics as a way to change the world. And that, you know, that's a bit of a problem.
Well, and again, I a little bit off topic, but it certainly seems to me that one of the hopes that young people seem to have for politics was in their engagement in the campaign, the campaigns of President Obama, and now it seems their engagement in the campaign of Bernie Sanders. I mean, if I can believe that awful media that we talked about, that it does seem there are a lot of millennials involved in those campaigns.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And we do some research on that, and they are voting for Sanders. I mean, on one hand, I guess I think we should acknowledge whatever you think about him as a candidate. I assume that listeners would have different views. We should acknowledge that as a genuine youth movement. There's real commitment there and thought. It's also ultimately pretty small. I mean, the average millennial's not out for Sanders. He's got a boomlet, and it's valuable, and it shows that there's a market for idealism, which we also saw in 2008. But most young people are not going to be that engaged by this campaign, I'm afraid.
Well, that's interesting. And again, let me just ask you, since I have you on the phone, and I can ask the question: fewer engaged this time with Sanders than they were with Obama? Or same numbers?
Actually, that's an interesting question. They're running neck and neck. We've been tracking that. So actually, but I think the difference is, just not to get too much into the partisan horse race, but the difference is, of course, Obama won.
Right.
So his support expanded after the, you know, as he won the nomination, and then of course he took it into the White House and won an overwhelming advantage among young people in the election. I don't think that Bernie Sanders is going to win. That's not my, you know, I'm not
right.
I'm not expert on that, and I'm not expressing a preference for myself, but I don't think he's going to win. And so the question is, what's going to happen to that early group that was supportive of Sanders when they don't have their nominee in the
now? But so my question is, were the millennials who were involved in 08 also involved in 12?
There's been some fall off. Of course, it's also been a while. I mean, we always forget. I'm older. We always forget how quickly life changes. I mean, the young folks for Sanders were in middle school.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And the Obama's young folks are now, you know, they're 30-something right. with kids and stuff. So it's a little bit different generation.
So listen, I assume, given the work you're doing, that I think engagement and volunteering and all that is a good thing. I think you think it's a positive thing. It helps society to be better.
Right, right.
So what I usually do with my guests is, for the last minute or two, I make you now czar of the world. What would be the two or three things you would do to get a greater level or greater higher quality of engagement by our young people?
I do. You don't throw money at problems, but I do think you have to invest. And
okay.
I think there ought to be good quality service opportunities for every kid who really wants to do it. I wouldn't go to a mandate because I don't think we can provide enough quality experiences, but it makes me sad to think that hundreds of thousands of young people would do a whole year of intense community service for very little money, but we don't have the slots.
Okay.
So I would triple the slots. And that goes down not just for that level, but even in the middle school setting, I would want to make sure that every kid who wanted to do this had a chance to do it, which means paying for it.
Right. Okay.
It's not free.
Good. That's one. You got anything else?
Well, I would change the state. This obviously affects public schools more than Catholic schools, but I would change the state standards and tests for civics so that they're more about changing the world for the better and less about just memorizing a bunch of facts about the U.S. Constitution.
Okay. That's good. Hey. Okay, you got my job. You can stay czar for a little bit longer. And I think one of the things you pointed out, Professor Wien, is that, you know, volunteers do cost money. You do have to invest resources to make sure the opportunities are good ones, that they engage people, and that they're solid. So I think that's a really, really kind of very helpful piece. So, hey, Professor Wien, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
It's
I found this enlightening, and I'm sure our listeners did too.
I learned too, and I enjoyed it anytime.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Tom, I think, you know, I think a lot we learned today. I mean, I think the engagement of the two millennials who we had here, Joey and Lindsay, was great. And I think Professor Levine told us that, you know, there's a lot of generosity out there. And we got to make sure that we provide good opportunities for people to kind of show their generosity, and they can have the opportunity to give back. And that creates a good habit throughout their lives. So I think that's a good thing. Okay. Tom, I think next week we're going to do a good part of our show on my trip to Iraq with Cardinal Dolan and Catholic Near East Welfare Association, and to share with our listeners some of the experiences that I had, because it is really, some of what's going on there is terribly underreported, and it's not something that we have a great sense of what is going on there. I mean, you know, I say shame on me, because there were things that I learned in the past week that were completely kind of not part of my awareness. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll give you a very simple example. The city that I flew into was the third largest city in Iraq, Erbil. And until a month ago, when I booked my ticket, I didn't even know the name of that city. And it's one of those things that, you know, boy, we get so caught up in our own world that we don't do it. And this is just a very tragic, sad situation. But I'll share with our listeners next week that there is also a tremendous sense of faith and of life and of hope. So it's not all a depressing situation, but it's a serious, it's a tragic situation. So next week, we'll talk about the situation of displaced persons in Iraq, primarily Christians and Muslims, and some Yazidi also. Thanks for being with us. This is our weekly conversation, Just Love. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.